Thank you and welcome to Scripture on Creation. I'm Scott Kump.
And I'm Dr. Ben Scripture.
Dr. Scripture, if I were to describe today's program, I would say it's like a box of chocolates.
A box of chocolates? Are you alluding to the Forrest Gump phrase, life is like a box of chocolates, you never know what you're going to get?
That was the general idea.
And it's Forrest Gump, not Kump.
Exactly.
Scott, does anyone ever get your name Kump confused with the movie character's name Gump?
Usually they do it on purpose.
Okay. Well, anyway, you're suggesting in today's program, people won't know what to expect? Like when you choose a piece of candy out of a box of chocolates?
Well, yes, because you want to discuss several different things. And to demonstrate to you something you didn't expect before we go on, I want to say congratulations, Grandpa, times two.
Oh,
I learned that you and Karen have just added two more grandchildren to your growing family.
Well, thanks, Scott. Yes, we have a new Scripture grandson, Benjamin Jack, born in September, and a new Pritchett granddaughter, Moira Ruth, born October 1st. Both mothers and babies are doing great. We are so blessed and grateful to our Creator and Lord for the priceless family He's given. I should say, is giving us.
Now, I know your family has a tradition of going by the middle name.
Mm-hmm.
So is the boy going to be called Jack and the girl Ruth?
Well, Scott, I didn't know this program would be all about names. But yes, Benjamin Jack Scripture will be called Jack. But my daughter Carolyn's newborn, Moira Ruth Pritchett, will go by Moira.
That is an unusual name. Now, is that a family name?
Moira is not, but Ruth is. My stepmom, who raised me from the time I was 5 years old after my biological mother passed away when I was four, was named Ruth. She was the mother I knew and the grandma Scripture my children knew.
Okay, so again, congratulations.
Thanks.
And the two additions make eight grandkids, right?
Right. But now, let's completely change the subject, Scott.
Okay.
We have an announcement, which is also a reminder for all our listeners. A few weeks ago, we announced our annual calendar giveaway. We've gotten a good number of requests, but we'd like to give away a lot more. So, Scott, I'm going to ask you to make the announcement again.
Okay, we are offering a complimentary calendar to all our listeners, and they can receive one free by simply asking for it. It's the 2019 God's Creation Calendar, and we all think this year's edition is especially beautiful.
Yeah.
Now, to receive one of these complimentary calendars for 2019, all one needs to do is contact us by email or phone, or even by regular mail.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, you must include your mailing address so we can send it to you.
Yes, and please let us know how you listen on the website or podcast or on the radio. And if by radio, let us know what station you listen to, or at least the city the station is in. And Scott, what is the email or phone number?
The email is scripture@scriptureoncreation.org. And the phone number is 574-551-1524. And if you contact us by phone, a text is the easiest way for us to get your information.
And I'll say a couple more things about the calendar. You can see what it looks like on the website. On the homepage, just click the tab that says Calendar Offer. And although we're giving just one free calendar to each person who asks, they are also available for purchase. Each additional calendar costs $10, which includes the postage. These calendars do make very nice gifts.
Just in time for Christmas.
Good point, Scott. And everyone will receive their calendar or calendars well in advance of the holiday.
So let's see. We've talked about grandkids. We've talked about calendars. What's next, Dr. Scripture?
Well, I'd like to answer a couple of questions I've recently received. Now, I've been preaching through the book of Genesis at my local church, and last Sunday, I spoke on Genesis chapter 6.
That's the record of God telling Noah to build the ark.
Very good, Scott. So, after the message, a young man in our assembly named Alex Beverly asked me a question. And by the way, I should point out, Alex is my new IT guy. I've always had a hard time doing all the website stuff, uploading and downloading and editing. So I've hired Alex to take care of all that stuff for us. I think everyone will see some immediate improvements in all things related to IT in the Scripture on Creation Ministries. But back to Alex's question. In the message, I was describing the ark, the amount of materials Noah would have had to have acquired to build it, how long, and so forth. And Alex asked if I thought the ark was still around.
Yes, sometimes we hear of expeditions to Mount Ararat and various claims of it being found, but nothing ever seems to come of those claims, nothing concrete anyway.
Yes, I agree. And I suggest that's because there is nothing left of the ark. Just think about it for a moment and put yourself in Noah and his son's place, and even Shem, Ham, and Japheth's children's place. Noah and his sons spent decades getting all that timber together to construct the ark. They had to do all that preparation, making the lumber, shaping it, waterproofing it with pitch. I mean, the amount of time, money, and effort that went into the materials in the ark would have been extensive. So, Noah and the family survived the flood. The ark is stranded on Mount Ararat somewhere, and now they have to build a new life, new dwellings and all that go with it. Where are they going to get the building materials?
The first and maybe only place would be from the ark.
For sure. You know, they've already done all the work to turn the timbers into lumber. Why would they find new logs and do the work all over again? Not to mention, there probably wasn't any timber available. It most likely was all buried under the sediment caused by the catastrophic erosion of the flood. And all that buried wood was the source of the coal distributed over all the earth. There surely were no standing forests around. There may have been some debris scattered on the surface, like logs and such, that didn't get buried, but surely the best source of building materials would have been the ark itself. So I submit the ark would have been totally dismantled and used for building material over the next few years, even decades following the flood. There would have been no ark left to find. And that's why I think no one has ever found it, even with all the efforts that have been made to find it.
But I do know where they can find it, Dr. Scripture. It's in Williamstown, Kentucky.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a good point, Scott. Of course, a lot of artistic license has gone into the construction of the Ark Encounter, but the Answers in Genesis organization has gone to great lengths to reproduce the size and general specifications as recorded in Genesis chapter 6. And I highly recommend to our listeners, if you haven't gone to the Ark Encounter yet, you need to plan a trip. In fact, I'm taking my own advice, and we're taking a group from our church to see the Ark the first Sunday of November.
Is Alex going?
As a matter of fact, he is.
Well, that's great, and we look forward to hearing about that trip. And by the way, Alex, that was a good question, and welcome to the Scripture on Creation team. You know, I can't wait to meet him in person someday.
All right.
So now, let's see. We still have some time today. What else do we have to talk about?
How about another question, Scott?
Okay.
This one I received in an email, and I was intrigued by it because I have never been asked it before, and I love new questions.
Really? So what was it, and who sent it to you?
It was sent by Robert Teams, and we don't know where he was from, but it was short and to the point. His question was, is the Hebrew word bara a word used throughout the Bible only with God as its subject?
That is an interesting question. If bara always means creating something out of nothing, you know, how could it be used in reference to anyone but God?
Well, Scott, I would agree with you if your premise is right, that bara only applies to ex nihilo creation. However, when we exhaustively search out the use of the Hebrew root word bara, we find it doesn't always mean ex nihilo creation. The root word bara occurs 57 times in 45 verses in the entire Old Testament, and in 4 instances, it refers to the activity of man, not God. So Scott, read Joshua 17, verse 15, and then verse 18.
Okay, verse 15. And Joshua said to them, if you are a numerous people, go up to the forest and clear a place for yourself there in the land of the Perizzites and of the Rephaim. And verse 18, for though it is a forest, you shall clear it, and to its farthest borders it shall be yours.
So, Scott, can you figure out which word was used to translate bara?
Well, it sounds like it would be clear or clear a place.
That's it. Bara, here in Joshua chapter 17, means to clear the forest. And, of course, it's people who are to do that. Now, I'll read another verse where the word bara refers to something humans do. And actually, it's very similar to the action of cutting down trees. Only in this case, it's a little grim. It's people. In Ezekiel chapter 23, verse 47, it says, "And the company will stone them with stones and cut them down." There's the translation of bara again. "Cut them down with their swords. They will slay their sons and their daughters and burn their houses with fire." So here we see bara was used to describe cutting down people or trees. And there is also another example in Ezekiel, but in this case, it refers to a man, Ezekiel in particular, making something, which is a little more like what we normally think the word bara means. So Scott, you read Ezekiel 21, verse 19.
Quote, "As for you, son of man, make two ways for the sword of the king of Babylon to come. Both of them will go out of one land. And make a signpost. Make it at the head of the way to the city." Unquote.
So there, bara is translated make, but it's a man who's doing the making. And finally, the fourth use of bara that refers to man's actions is in 1 Samuel 2:29. God is speaking, and he says, "Why do you kick at my sacrifice and at my offering, which I have commanded in my dwelling, and honor your sons above me by making yourselves fat with the choicest of every offering of my people Israel?" So now here, making yourselves fat translates that root word bara. And in that case, they're definitely not making themselves fat out of nothing. They're eating the fat portions that belong to God. Therefore, to answer Robert's question, in the Bible, bara does not only have God as its subject. Which means then, as much as we might like to have the word bara be a kind of code word for ex nihilo creation wherever we find it, I mean, obviously, that would be convenient, right?
Yeah.
And there wouldn't be any question about what exactly it means. The word can mean something different. We always have to be very careful. Scripture interprets itself, and this is what gets people in trouble. They want some proof text or they want some word to back up their preconceived notion. Scripture interprets itself, and so bara can mean something other than ex nihilo creation. But as we find, generally it does mean creating out of nothing. So, how do we determine the meaning of bara wherever we might find it in the Old Testament? Context, context, context. And with that in mind, and considering the context, we can be absolutely certain the word bara means created out of nothing when it says, "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth," because that's not what I say, that's what Scripture says. Now, a reminder for all our listeners.
To receive the 2019 God's Creation Calendar, contact us by email or phone. The email is scripture@scriptureoncreation.org, and the phone number is 574-551-1524.